Good morning. I'd like to call to order the Finance Administration Operations Committee meeting of January 15th. Can you please take the roll?
Committee Chair Peterson?
Here.
Director Darcy?
Here.
Director Gonzalez?
Here.
Chair Wolf?
Here.
Chair,
we have a quorum.
Okay. Thank you. Is there any public comment? I don't believe there is today. Okay. No public comment. We're going to have to defer the approval of the minutes of the FAO committee held in November to the February meeting because they weren't out for review or approval. So they'll be out prior to the next board meeting, finance committee meeting. Executive Director Christie is on her way. We have a errors and omissions presentation that Paul is going to give, so why don't we go right into that now?
Okay.
Good morning, directors.
Good morning.
This is exciting because usually Christie gives a preview that gives you the whole.
Don't panic.
Message.
Do it, Paul.
So as I promised, I believe it was last month, I told the committee that I would come back to you all and give you a briefing on our errors and omissions policy, the way it's conducted right now, and give you the opportunity to ask questions and then also make suggestions if you wanted to. The agenda is pretty brief. I'm going to go through some of the reasons why we had changes on our contracts and plans, talk about what an error and an omission actually is, explain what the process is for engineering right now, let you know that we have had a pretty successful track record so far. There hasn't been a lot of recoverable costs to date, and but also reinforce with you that, we are open to new suggestions. We are continuously looking to improve, and that's actually part of our ISO process in engineering. So there's a lot of reasons why there would be contract changes or changes in the contract plans. And errors and omissions is a small portion of that. For instance, we do have very fast-track schedules for our projects. We like that. I'm fully dedicated to getting the work done on time, putting it out on the street, getting it built on time, because I know that that's what's in the best interest of the customers, the people who are driving on the road. There will be times when the site conditions will vary from what we show in the contract plans. The things that are underground, we do have procedures in place for trying to figure out what that soil type is or if there are any obstructions that are buried out there, but it doesn't make sense to pay for all the soil borings that would have to be done to know everything that's underneath the ground. So, but we have procedures in place to address those differing site conditions. We do make changes to our specs, kind of on the fly, and laws change from time to time. And sometimes we don't have the luxury to wait to put it in the contract. We have to make that change immediately, and we have to notify the folks in the field, and they have to modify the contract to meet the new requirement. We always balance out our quantities at the end of every single construction job because we only pay for the actual amount of work that's done out there. It's all based on unit prices and units of work done. So when you go into the job, all the quantities are estimates, and at the end of the job, all the quantities are known, and then you have to balance out each and every line item in that contract for just the amount of work that was actually done in the field. So we always have changes at the end. Errors and omissions, that's the primary focus of this presentation. I will give you background on that. And then there's miscellaneous things that are really beyond anyone's control, and weather is one example of that. So errors and omissions, these are the legal definitions, and I will simplify it for you all. An error is really a mistake. An omission is something that was left out. It's something that we forgot to put in there. And that's what you should keep in mind as we talk about, recoverable costs, because it'll help better understand
what the tollway should expect from our consultants. So this flow chart right here does explain the process. We did make one small change in this morning. So the ones that are on your laptops might not match it, but this one up here is correct. It really starts with the C5 committee, and that's Contract Cost Change Controls Committee. It's comprised of representatives of engineering. At minimum, we always had 3 members of engineering in that committee, and we have an invite, standing invites to procurement, finance, and audit to attend this, and they do from time to time. In general, somebody from finance is at almost every single one of those meetings. But C5 is where every single change to a construction contract gets evaluated. Every single one of them does. And that C5 committee is really the upfront initial screeners. They, when they evaluate the change, they write down whether or not they feel there was a potential error or an omission associated with that change. So we have a record of whether or not there was even the potential for error or an omission on every single change that is occurring on a tollway construction contract. Beyond that, these potential items are the ones that are identified as potential errors and omissions that have costs, construction cost changes that are greater than $50,000. Those get evaluated in more detail, and they do a little more research on them and get some more information to determine is there any significant potential for the tollway to recover costs on those. We do engage the designer on those ones that we do feel there are potential for recoverable costs, and we ask them to give us their side of the story and explain, you know, maybe what some of the mitigating factors might have been behind that error and omission. And then the chief engineer does make the final decision on every E&O item that we feel there is a recoverable cost. So to date, though, I need to tell you that we've had an excellent design track record. We have very qualified and professional people working for us. I've been in the industry over 30 years. I've been a consultant, and I've worked at the tollway for the past 14 years. And I can tell you, there isn't any engineer out there who is intending, when they do work, to not do it to the utmost standards and to try to give us what we want. The engineers, they don't get repeat work based on bidding on jobs. They know it's solely based on their reputation and how happy the client is with their work. So they typically will go out of their ways to make sure that, you know, the client's happy with their work, they're fully satisfied, and they stand behind it. And I don't feel there's any issue with accountability on the fact, you know, on the side of the designers out there. We do perform detailed plan reviews independent of the designers on every submittal that they give us. So we do a concept submittal, a preliminary, a pre-final, and a final. So we do check them ourselves to try to screen out any, you know, noticeable things that might not be up to speed. But at the end of the day, we do have a very robust process for managing the changes that occur on our construction contracts. And you've heard me explain the ones that are actually above $200,000. But we do have we are averaging very, very well on the cost associated with those changes on our construction contracts. The industry average is between 5 to 10% of the original contract awards, and we know we're less than 1. We're actually close to 0% right now. If you look at your monthly report for the program, combined program, all of our capital work, we're like at 0% right now. So when we come to the board and we tell you this is the award amount, in general, overall, all of our jobs are finishing very, very, very close to that original award amount. Maybe not on an individual project basis, but as a program overall, that's what we're averaging. So we haven't had the need to recover a lot of additional costs thus far in the program. And we've had few potential E&O items actually identified. So from 2005 to 2013, this is the time period where we've done a lot of capital work. That's when CRP started, and that's when Move Illinois was engaged. The C5 committee has actually gone through nearly 15,000 authorizations to proceed. And those ATPs, or authorizations to proceed, are the things that eventually turn into change orders and extra work orders. So of those 15,000, about 243 were identified as having the potential for an E&O, error or an omission, and they did get further evaluated. And we've determined that recoverable costs, of the 2009 of these potential E&Os that we've reviewed so far, we've only had $20,000 that we actually thought was a recoverable cost to the tollway. And I... 209 E&Os that we've evaluated thoroughly so far, only $20,000 has, we felt, the tollway incurred additional costs. I think it's important to know recoverable costs is not the same thing as the total cost of the change. Because recoverable costs are just, they have to represent just what we felt we paid in a, over and above what we should have paid if the plans had been perfect, if the plans had shown everything correctly. And some examples of that are, an omission where I know I need 20 light poles, but the plans show 19. I pay for 20, but I already have a unit price established for those 19, and that unit price I felt is competitive and is consistent with our historical pricing. So I know the tollway had to pay for an additional light pole, but we actually received the full benefit of that, and we didn't pay anything extra. So the only time I really feel that the only time that the tollway is actually due to recover costs is when we do pay something in addition. And an example of that might be the designer lays out the design for all of our drainage structures. And these are items that are delivered to the sites. They have holes in them. They sink them in the ground. They connect the pipes up to them. Let's say they did not identify the correct hole placements in these big structures that get delivered to the site. So while they're on site, we notice that they're in the wrong spot, so I have to pay the contractor to drill new holes and fill in the old ones. So that's additional work that, the tollway wouldn't normally have had to pay, or wouldn't, these costs were incurred over and above, if they had been shown in the plans correctly to begin with. So that gives you a little background on that. But as I mentioned, we are dedicated to continually improving our process, and from time to time, we evaluate it with respect to what others are doing. And in the appendix, we do have some detailed information about all these other agencies or departments, who we looked at, what they do with respect to E&O. And I'm happy to say that, we are very, very consistent with what everybody is doing as a best practice. And some of the key items that repeat in all of these are that you should track your changes with respect to E&O. And our C5 committee does a great job of doing that. We should have a procedure that's spelled out that identifies what we do, and we do have that also. Use a committee of experts to evaluate those significant E&Os. Maintain an appropriate threshold for doing E&O review, because to go after every single change, regardless of dollar amount, won't be cost-effective for the tollway to do. So as I explained, I could pay the designer to do soil borings on every one of our jobs every 2 feet, but at the end of the day, it's not cost-effective to do that. We're going to spend way more money in doing that than we would in just handling the change as it occurs. And then also, you have to engage the designer. You have to eventually go to the designer and say, we don't think, you did this correctly, and you need to give us your response, and you need to explain to us, why this happened. It's always, they will tell you the other side of the story, and you have to give them the opportunity to tell you that. So the items that I really wanted, the board to give me some feedback on are in this last slide right here, and these are some of the questions. Are there other best management practices that you know of that you would like to see us include over and above what we have already incorporated into our current E&O policy? I mean, I feel that, we are being very consistent with what ASHTO says we should do, and, they're kind of setting the standard for the whole country. I don't think we have any glaring omissions ourselves and, a best practice right now. I would like to also know about the, you know, what you consider to be an appropriate threshold. Right now, everything that trips a construction change greater than 50,000, we do a detailed evaluation on. And we have to spend a lot of time in evaluating these E&Os. And then we have engaged third-party independent consultants to come in and actually weigh in on our E&Os and tell us, you know, based on their national experience, what they feel about that. And that actually might be one of the items that I feel less inclined to do now. It's getting very, very difficult for us to find someone who's completely independent of our work. And from 2005 till now, we have a very good understanding of, you know, what types of items are error and omissions and what types of recoverable costs we can expect to recover. Were there any questions?
I did a horrible job of engaging.
Yes. This is the engagement part. The discussion. Okay.
The threshold, how was it determined that 50,000 was the threshold? How did you arrive at that? How long ago was that arrived at? Was that within the last few years or is that going back a ways?
It was since the beginning. Okay. And I think 50,000 was just our gut feeling.
Of the CRP program?
Yeah. From like 2005, it's always been 50,000. You know, we have to expend a significant effort convening an errors and omissions committee to evaluate these and to do some additional homework and additional digging on each one of these items. We've had 243. We felt, you know, 50,000 is, you know, our break-even point.
You still feel that way then today?
I wouldn't mind it being higher, 100,000. I think that, you know, considering what things cost today and how much time and effort, you know, based on our experience in evaluating the 200 that we did so far, I think that the significant changes are really the ones that are above 100,000, and those are the ones where we probably have the greatest potential to recover any costs. And since I only had one out of 200, I don't feel like we're missing many.
And it looked as if Arizona at least would use the 100,000. We know from the other examples that you looked at what their threshold was.
And that's true also. I did notice that even on IDOTs, they have a graduated scale, but in all their ones that are above, let me see what it says, 10 million, and a lot of our jobs are in that range. You know, they do go to 1%.
What's IDOT file? They follow the U.S. Department of Transportation's model?
Nope, they have their own. Mm-hmm. They have their own error and emissions. But everyone kind of tries to follow the guidelines of ASHTO, which is, you know, they're promoting federal best management practices.
Each construction contractor, they have a contingency, don't they, in their bids? Is there a contingency in the construction contracts when they're awarded?
Typically, we don't have contingencies in the construction contracts. I mean, we are. That's why we've had 15,000 processed authorizations to proceed, because they get paid by the actual units of work that they're done, and if the units don't match exactly what's in the plans, we have to process it as a change.
And do you think that that's a good practice, not to have a contingency?
I think it gives us a much better handle on, you know, what the work is actually costing us. You know, the primary focus of everyone right now is delivering this Move Illinois program and getting the work out on the street and getting the work done on time. And that's the driving force behind a lot of what we're doing right now. So anything that's towards that goal and towards that aim, I'm generally in favor of. I feel that, you know, the way the contracts are structured right now, the construction contracts, and since we have been able to deliver our program the way we want it so far, I don't feel there is a need to make big changes in that. And likewise with the error and omissions. I mean, I'm getting great cooperation from the consultant community right now. We do put a lot of responsibility on them to deliver our plans on time and to give us good product. And the fact that at the end of the day, we're spending very, very close to what we had originally established as the contract award amount gives me comfort that, you know, we're actually following through on it, and there's not anything that's not proceeding the way we want it to proceed, or that's off track.
It seems to me then that $100,000 threshold would help you, particularly with the expanded amount of work you have coming at you, to eliminate some of those look-sees at your C5 level.
Yes, and I think that's the primary reason why I would even consider raising the threshold, because it would help us focus more on the other work items and not on an item that's not really delivering a lot back to the tollway at the end of the day. And if I felt that we didn't have a strong accountability of our consultants already, I might, you know, recommend something different. But I do see it in the people that we're working with, and they do recognize that they have a lot of responsibility.
So I'll just say, and I apologize for missing the introduction of this presentation. We worked very hard on it, I think, in the last couple of days, so I want to thank Paul and his team for that, and I know that there was a lot of interest, not a lot of interest, but of course we always want the board to be confident that we've got, you know, strong procedures and a process in place to deal with errors and omissions, but also just the entire construction practice. I mean, we spend a great deal of money on it, obviously, and we're responsible for large programs, so we want to make sure that the confidence level is there. Paul and his team, I think, have done a very nice job in doing a best practices assessment and taking a look at our procedures. Is that $50,000 level, Paul, and forgive me because I don't know, and you might not know off the top of your head, is that set in the C5 policy or resolution that was approved by the board, or is that something that's an internal change that we can make given the board's, you know, agreement that we can look at raising the threshold?
That's an excellent question. We'll have to check on that.
Yeah.
I don't believe it is,
but we
have to verify that.
Yeah. Okay. So, and again, I apologize for being late. Apparently, I left the house with my husband's only set of car keys this morning. Allegedly, I left the house with my husband's only set of car keys.
An error or a mission?
It was definitely an error. It was definitely an error. I have paid the compensation many times over, believe me.
So, I sense there's a consensus here that it would make sense to look at the 100,000 threshold.
I look at the. When you see that the state average for changes in contract is 5% and with the tollways averaging 0.1%, it really shows that there's a lot of planning and design that's being done on the tollways part that we're not at the 5%. I would say if we were close to that industry, I would try to keep it low. But I think that's right there a good reason why we should try to raise it if we're operating at 0.1% when it comes to changes on contract awards.
I concur.
Yeah.
You can come back and let us know.
Yes.
I will proceed.
Okay, I'll verify whether or not that was included in the resolution to begin with, and then, you know, if not, I'll let know.
And thank you for all your work on this. I know it's very involved and spent a lot of time putting together that request, so thank you. Any other questions?
Christy, do you have anything?
No.
If you'd like to?
Nothing else.
Okay. Procurement. John?
Okay.
You want?
Thank you, Director. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So procurement has six items for your consideration this morning. The first item is a request to utilize a CMS master contract to purchase 14 plow trucks. All of these trucks are replacements. The older trucks that meet our replacement criteria, which is either 7,000 engine hours or 15 years. 10 of these trucks are single axle trucks that are used to plow the plazas and the ramps where maneuverability is critical. And the remaining four of these trucks are tandem axle trucks, which are used to plow the main line. These trucks are obviously used during the winter for snow removal operations, but we also utilize them throughout the whole year for general roadway maintenance work. Award is recommended to Rush Truck Centers in a total amount not to exceed $2,141,827.68.
And this is basically a part of the annual purchasing.
That's correct.
Process that we have through fleet management.
Correct. Yeah, every year we go through a procurement to purchase more plow trucks to replace older ones. So the second item is a request to utilize the CMS master contract to purchase waste hauling services throughout our system. This master contract covers the whole state, which is broken down into four regions. The Chicago region is the first region. That includes Cook, DuPage, Lake, and Will counties. Obviously, we have a lot of presence in that area, in that region. The other three regions are the northern, central, and southern Illinois. So we only participate in two of the regions, the Chicago region and the northern region. And the majority of our usage is the Chicago one. So frequency of the service is based on the needs of each location with a minimum of one pickup per week. Award is recommended to Independent Recycling Services Incorporated for the Chicago region and Allied Waste Transportation Incorporated, doing business as Republic Services Incorporated for the northern region, the total amount not to exceed $360,654.
Okay. I think we're going to have a presentation, the Enterprise Resource Planning Advisory Services presentation.
That's correct. So I wanted to introduce Prasad Alavilli, who's our Senior Manager of Strategic Initiatives, and he will be providing a brief update or presentation on our whole ERP initiative, and then I'll dive back into the procurement component.
Well, good morning, everyone. I have a couple of slides to set the context for this services within the larger ERP program. To start with, though, just as a quick recap of the ERP initiative, across the departments, finance, HR, procurement, engineering, and operations, we have systems currently in use that are about 30 years old. While these systems are functional, we have significant challenges with these systems. Some of these challenges have to do with the usability, maintenance, reporting, and compliance of these systems. So, and the reasons for these are because of the obsolete technology. The systems are customized heavily. Are modified, and the personnel who did those customizations, the skill set is very difficult to find, and the personnel have either retired or retiring. So just some of these are issues, you know, to name a few of them. So ERP initiative is undertaken to modernize these systems and replace them with the state-of-the-art software solution. We recognize that it's not going to be an easy effort to just swap those systems, and we understand there will be a significant effort to plan, prepare, and execute, implement, and go the entire organizational change management processes to go from where we are today to where we want to be in future. So to that end, we have identified at least three specific services that we'll be requesting for. One of them is the advisory services. Advisory services are the, we'll start with those services. They are the ones that stay with us from the beginning of the program to the end of the program for the duration of the program. And they'll help us with the subject matter expertise. They understand the requirements. They help us with the RFPs that we want to put together. And they also help us with the planning preparation and the organizational change management aspects of the program. The second one is the independent verification and validation services. As the name indicates, these are independent of the delivery services that you can procure. And they are responsible for the for ensuring quality and integrity of the deliverables, everything from planning phase to the execution phase. And the third one is implementation services. That's where the rubber meets the road. Basically, we start implementing the systems, the modules, one after another, in a prioritized phase rollout. The fourth one I have here is the additional services as we need, as we identify any gaps between the business requirements and the software solution that we find identify. Those will be needed at the time. So essentially, these are the three services that we'll be focusing on during the program. And the current focus for today is the advisory services. And in the next slide, I will We have the approach and the timeline for these services. So on the top, you have the timeline, which is the last quarter of 2013, this year 2014, and the first quarter of 2015. The one circle in red is the advisory services. That's the first part of our initiative. As you see, there are two different scope items for this. One is the requirements gathering, understanding our business, and putting an RFP for the implementation services. And the second one is the assistance with the strategic planning and the change management aspects of the group. And between the two program scopes, we also have the program management for the duration of the program. And the second one, we talked about the IVNVE services, the independent verification validation services, let's go back to the advisory services. We, once it's approved, we'd like to start that sometime in March. Realistically, I think mid-March is what we're targeting right now. For the IVNV services, where we want to set define, monitor, report on all the independent verification activities, we would like to start that as soon as possible after advisory services starts. So we will be coming back in front of the board again, requesting for approvals once we are through the IVNV RFP process. Then the implementation will be starting most likely at the end of 2014 or early 2015. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Who's currently providing services now?
I don't know that there. This is the new system that we're developing in response to some of the audit findings that we've had. So we don't necessarily have these services at this time.
Yes, so this is a new initiative, and what we're using for some of these components today is our Unisys main.